Booyah, and it's time for the Game Sports Podcast. It is your host, David McKaig Jr. The Game Sports Podcast is powered by 91N. That's 91 Network. Make sure to like, follow, and subscribe on the 91N YouTube channel. This is yet another episode of the Game Sports Podcast special edition episodes. Now, this is an episode where we have a show that has featured yours truly, usually a co-host as well, but we're joined by a very special guest here on these episodes, and it's an interview segment. Pretty well and straightforward to notify you of that. Now, I'm going to go right into my introduction since I'm not introducing anybody, and there's not going to be any sponsors that I'm going to be introducing, just discussing 91N. So make sure that you head on over to 91N to, of course, hit like, follow, and subscribe. I'll make sure I remind you of that. Getting to our guest right off the hop, he is someone that you probably see in the title of the show. So it's obviously kind of challenging doing these introductions, but you know I like to do them. You know I like to talk. So buckle up, get your popcorn ready. I'm definitely not missing out on my usual introductions. He's a former third round pick, 70th overall by the Calgary Flames in the National Hockey League in 2004 is when he got drafted. He played 486 NHL games, totaling 115 points and 1,036 penalty minutes for the Flames, Coyotes, Rangers, Canadians, and Canucks. He also played 53 playoff games in the NHL, and in the AHL he played as well, and in the DEL. Rewinding back to the OHL, he spent 3 years with the London Knights, where he won an OHL championship and a Memorial Cup championship with those Knights, where he played with guys like Dave Boland, Corey Perry, and of course, friend of the show, Rob Shrimp. Definitely a stacked squad, very stacked squad. This guest is now retired, and he's making his mark off the ice in the athletic world, per se. But we'll let him get into that, of course. I'm not going to take all that time. He is someone that was not afraid to get into the dirty areas on the ice, and of course, was a sandpaper type of guy. And he was not afraid to drop the mitts, just because, and to help his team, but to also defend his teammates. He's the one and only Brendan Prust. Brendan, thanks for coming on the show here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know what? It's always fun to do these shows. You know, you get to know the hockey community. It's just so big. It's absolutely massive, especially, obviously, you're a Canadian boy. I'm a Canadian boy. It doesn't matter. You've talked to anyone overseas. You talk to anyone with our neighbors across the border. Yeah, the community is so big, and it doesn't matter what level someone may have played. It's connected in some way. And whenever you just meet someone or you get to know someone or you've been trying to get someone on a show for a little while, it's just when you get anything to talk about hockey or anything involving hockey, I just feel like being a little bit biased here, maybe a little bit, but talking to hockey players, we can talk about anything at any time. We don't need to really have an introduction, or even if we do have an introduction, it's always a fun conversation. But you would know from playing the game for so long, it's a big community.
It's a big community, but also a small community. You know, it doesn't take long to kind of get that connection through somebody. It's only, I know they say, what is it, like six handshakes? I think in the hockey world, it's only one or two. So, you know, it's a big community, but definitely small. And it's always, hey, you know, this guy? Yeah, okay, he's a good guy. All right, okay, I'll do that for you, all right? Like, even when we made trades, it'd be like, you know, someone knew the guy that we traded for, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, he's a beauty. He's a great guy, right? So then you're just like, okay, he's a good guy. One guy says it, so you're in. So, yeah, it's big, but it's still small.
Yeah, honestly, it's definitely a community that a lot are proud of, and it's a really big community. Look at podcasts, look at sports coverage. It's unbelievable and how big the game has grown from a media perspective and how everyone's getting connected in a certain way. But that's a very good point. Now, I usually have a post opener, but we have so many topics that I want to get into. Okay, so many. So I'm not going to use one of my post opener topics as usual. I'm going to jump right into the first topic here. Okay, and going into that right off the hop, I want to talk about and start off the show with talking about what you're doing in your post career. Okay, now we're going to get into your career. There's some juice. There's some meat and potatoes. We'll get into with that, of course, but there's obviously something that I mentioned the opener, and if people do follow you on social media, which obviously you're on Instagram, you're on all the socials, you are, well, per se, involved in the athletic world that I mentioned off the hop. Doesn't matter if they're young adults, youth, professionals, whatever it may be. You opened something recently, and I want to give you the floor to talk about it, because there's a lot to talk about with it, and there's a lot of points I want to bring up, because I'm very interested to know about this path that you've chosen after your career.
Yeah, I, well, ever since I, even when I was playing, when even in my 20s with my trainer, I always talked about when I retired that I wanted to kind of pass down that knowledge that I've gained through my training and through my hockey experiences and you know, trying to make hockey teams, right? I was never really given anything. I had to work for everything I got. So it's something that I always wanted to do after I was done. And, you know, I was kind of starting to think about it, and then COVID hit and kind of put a damper on it. And so I finally, I finally got things up and running, and I got the gym open now. So, it's been a long time. We've been building it for a couple years. BP8 is what it's called. And, we do a lot, it's a bit of a hybrid gym. So I do a lot of hockey training, a lot of teams right now during the season. So it's more team training. But I'm doing some personal training with kids as well. And then in the off season, I'm going to be doing a summer program, basically a 3-month training program, which is going to offer off ice, on ice, track work, nutrition, sports psychology, all that fun stuff. So, it's been a fun trek. It's been a lot of work, a lot of hard work, but we're finally up and running, and still working kind of every day to make sure, I don't leave that gym too often anymore.
No, honestly, when you own something, I can go from owning a gym when it comes to owning a bar, when it comes to owning something, when you own something, you, especially today's society, is putting all that effort into it and putting your blood and sweat into it a different way. And marketing's big, and, you know, getting onto the obvious points there. But you mentioned something that was, we're going to get into points here now with it. The London Free Press, which is actually something that you recently uploaded on Instagram. But of course, we did our research and saw the article that was posted. And I'm reading it exactly just so everyone doesn't know, with me looking at a camera, that I've memorized the post. I'm not that good, I would say. But they are trying to build that you're trying to build something unique, right? It's where people will want to come work out, and a lot of people need guidance. So I think that's a very good point, because I think a lot of players, you know, if it's my age growing up before, or if it was anybody in the new age generation, the game is very different. The game's evolved, and the way the game's thought about with working out is so much different now. Like, I remember, and I'm sure you can relate to this, it's when you played. If you're a 90s birth year, late 80s, a 90s birth year, even mid 90s, I felt that when you were working out, it's all that power, right? It's the deadlifts. It's a lot of those just explosive, heavy lifting. Not that you're getting absolutely shredded and massive, shredded, yes, but massive, big guy. No, you're doing a lot of power moves, a lot of squats at the gym, which I imagine is still effective. I believe they were, but the deadlifts, a lot of strenuous, right? Where running and cardio was also used, but it's now used in a different technique, plyometrics, or it's just more technique based, right? I feel that they work out smarter now. So I felt that was a very good point that you brought up, that you want people to go there, but, you know, that will want to come work out, but you also know that people need the guidance. So did you find challenges related to that guidance per se while you were working out in your career, and it made you now a better trainer or just a gym owner? You know what those were?
Yeah, I think, the knowledge that I've gained is through all my, I know what I did right. I know what I've done wrong. I know that, maybe I was missing some guidance in this area, right? Even just someone to talk to. I was pretty good at kind of trying to figure things out on my own, but it's always good to have, even when it comes to off the ice with if you're battling something within your team or with your coach, maybe you're not getting the playing time. Maybe you need to find a different type of role, right? Like, you can, some of these kids, they're always first liners. They're first liners, first liners, first liners, and then they get to the OHL, and okay, now they're a third liner, right? And it's like, it's weird for them. And then they get to the NHL, and it's like, I'm not a fourth liner, but it's like, you are, because you're playing with, Connor Bedard. He's way ahead of you, right? So you have to find your role. I was able to do that. I was, I was always a first liner, but then I was like, okay, I'm playing with Corey Perry and David Boland and, Rob Schrempf and Danny Fritchie or whatever. Like, I'm not going to steal their spot on the power play. I need to find my role and where my role is. So that's a part of the guidance as well, right? Helping kids find their role and still be confident in that. And then on the training side of things, you know, I still, like you say, the deadlifts and the squats, those are still, I think, very important things that you have to do because you need that strength. But there's a lot more plyometric stuff going on now and making sure you keep that explosive power and quickness. You're not just bulking up, right? You're trying to bulk up, but stay as fast as stay super fast, right? Or even get faster. So yeah, there's a little, definitely we've evolved in that, the workout world. And that's another thing that I'm learning every day. You know, I'm constantly watching videos, constantly reading up on new training techniques, and, it's forever changing. Right. So, but the basics are still there and the hard work. And, you know, I had some kids in the other day and they were like, you know, halfway through, they're like, this is the hardest workout I've ever done. And I was like, this is a mediocre workout, boys. Like, you guys haven't really worked out yet, because this is nothing to what you'll see in the summer. So
there's more things coming.
yeah. I was kind of like, okay, because they were great athletes. They're, you know, they're good kids, and they, you know, they're 15 and they've done the workouts and stuff. And they were just like, oh, this is the hardest workout I've ever done. I was like, this is nothing, boys. You guys are
we're
in trouble.
Be puking 5 minutes
yeah,
in.
You guys are in trouble.
And that's funny that you actually said that, because my next quote was going to be like, you mentioned this. You have to reach kids. You may not be a first-line center, but help them find the role, find that purpose, right? And, and that's a great segue into this, because that is just – people can take it as related to experience, or I've known people, doesn't matter. You can go to so many different areas. It's not just somebody, you know, definitely has experiences. Cause you said it, you have this time growing up. It could be, if let's say you were an A player or the rep player, doesn't matter what the team or league that you're in. Maybe you were the guy, you were the Connor Bedard or the McDavid or the Matthews, right? You were that, or maybe you were the Carey Price, you know, maybe that was you, depending on what your role is. Maybe you were the guy, you were in every game, you were on the power play, penalty kill. You know what, they played you as a goalie 50 out of 55 games because, you know, they got 47 wins because you were in between the pipes. You know, that it's completely different as you grow, get up more in the leagues. You know, if it's the OHL, it's the East Coast Hockey League, the AHL, the NHL, the, I guess we can say, the end all be all. It's the best league in the world. It rightfully so. You're playing, and everyone in their, and their brother, their sister, everyone wants to play in the National Hockey League. So obviously if you get to that level, to stay in that level, you're going to have to adapt. So, but I think a realistic approach is if you can learn your role in the major junior level, which I think it's something that you mentioned that you did, right? You learned what was best for you. And I believe, if I have his name correctly, I believe it was, Bob, I was going to talk about a little bit later, but Chris Bain was the guy like, I'm not going to spoil my next topic, but someone that you looked up to, but you learned what was best for you and what was going to work for you, right? And to stay in the lineup.
Well, one good example that I kind of always use on this topic is David Bolin, right? David Bolin came out of the OHL and he was probably London Knights. I think he's one of the top all-time scorers for London Knights. Always a first liner, always power play. And then in Chicago, you know, he knows he's on a team that's got a chance to win a Stanley Cup. And he says, well, do I sulk here and kind of be upset that I'm not ahead of Kane or Taze or all those boys, like, or am I just going to find my role here and help my team win a Stanley Cup and then, you know, end up making my millions, which, you know, which he did. But he, you know, he was kind of the third line centerman, right? And like Dave Bolin on your hockey team as a third line centerman, you got a pretty good hockey team. So he found his role, played that checking line. He changed it. He totally changed his game from being that, you know, obviously he still did his offensive stuff. He was that good of a player, but he kind of played that, you know, that role and ended up winning two cups, you know, being that checking guy, being that rat that was getting in Sedin's face, right? Like, you know, he totally adjusted his, the way he's always known how to play hockey, which was just be a first liner and be counted on to score, you know, 50 goals.
Goal too. Scored a
Yeah, so that's
learned that way, right?
It's a great example.
Very good. And I think you were a walk-on to London. I think I got that correct. You were a walk-on to London. Obviously, you got drafted. I mentioned the beginning to Calgary. which is awesome, right? Because you were a walk-on in the O, and you get drafted third round in the end. And a good draft. If everyone remembers 04, I think everyone should remember who went first overall in 04. If you're a hockey fan, his name is Alex Ovechkin. That's a pretty good draft. A lot of other good players in that draft, and I could get into that. But you got drafted after. So
yeah,
walk-on drafted to the end. That's a big step. So you obviously did something right in terms of your off ice and your mentality. But it's you've made the adjustments at the right time that caught the eye of scouts. Then you obviously look at the NHL career that you made out of yourself and look what's happening now. But that's a great example. And I think just some things that you can mention to people saying, hey, it doesn't matter. People are always so heartbroken if they don't get drafted. It doesn't matter if you don't get drafted. It truly does. NHL or OHL, it doesn't matter. If you're good enough, Angelo Bumbacco was a scout. I'm not sure if you ever met him, but he was a scout for Tampa Bay. He was in Sault Ste. Marie, well known for the Sault Ste. Marie grounds. And he mentioned to my parents, it was a setting where he mentioned to a group of parents, where he said, if you're good enough, you'll be found on a pond.
Yeah.
Scouts will find you. And my whole point of mentioning this is because you obviously had to go through a lot to realize who you are as a player to be able to grow into the player that you did become. That I'm sure you enjoyed playing. I'm sure you also probably like scoring goals, but I'm sure you loved getting the games in the National Hockey League too, as you adapted to your role and who you were.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing. Once I got invited to camp, I knew that it was kind of in my hands, right? I knew if I played well enough and turned heads enough that I was going to be, I would make the team. And then I knew from there, once I was even on the Knights, I knew if I worked my butt off, it was in my hands to show the scouts that I was good enough to play in the NHL, right? So once I kind of got there, I knew, it can be tough if you're, I don't know if if I was on a pond, if you skate on a pond every day, it'd be hard to get noticed. But I guess I kind of got that, invite. Once I got that invite, it's a crazy story how I got invited even to play Junior B. It was the last game of the year. I was playing AAA, and it was the last game of the year, and the Zamboni died on the ice and burnt a hole in the ice, and the game got canceled, and we had to play the next night in London, and the London National Scouts came to watch that game that was back in London, that game that shouldn't have happened, because it was we were playing a team, it was playoffs, we were down 2-0. I think it was the best 3 out of 5 or something. We were going to get smoked by this team, so it was going to be the last game. And we ended up, it got canceled, and we played back in London, and the Nationals coaches came and watched me play and then invited me to come practice with the team the rest of the year. And then, so I'm also what if that never, what if I never, what the Zamboni never died? And then I played Junior B that year, and I had a really good year, and I wanted to get invited to Knights camp. And I went to Knights camp the year before, but I told them that I wanted to go the scholarship route because I didn't think I was going to make the Knights. So I was like, well, I think I'm just going to try and get a scholarship. Yeah. So the next year I was like, I don't want to do the scholarship. I want to go play for the Knights. Never got a call. I never got a call all summer. A week before camp, my dad's golfing. Dale Hunter's golfing. Someone hits their golf ball on the other person's fairway. And I don't know who's telling the truth. My dad says Dale hit his ball over. Dale says my dad hit his ball over. But they ran into each other. And my dad was like, hey, I'm Brandon Prust, Dad. He was been expecting a call. I wanted to come to camp this year. And Dale was like, I thought he wanted to go scholarship. And they're like, no, he wants to play for you guys. I got a call later that day. I was at camp a week later and made the team. So, if my dad or Dale weren't terrible golfers, what would have happened, right? So it's crazy how things work out.
Like I said, it's almost like a dare of fate. Right there, you say that term, fate. I don't want to – things happen for a reason.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It's cool. And I bet you – I don't know if you – I bet you if we ever asked Wayne Gretzky this or McDavid this, if they think anything's surreal. But thinking back of when you played, you're probably like, geez, this is surreal. I played in the National Hockey League. And you didn't just play in the National Hockey League, Brandon. You were in a lineup for a long time for hockey meccas of the world. You know, the Montreal, the New York. I'm not going to say Arizona is by any means. Yeah. Jokes aside, but Vancouver. Yeah. But jokes aside, you played a National Hockey League game, which, sure, a lot of people could say in terms of had a game, but to say someone had a stable career and someone who made an impact on the game and with their team, you did that. And like, do you ever just look back and say, holy shit, I played in the NHL? You know, like a lot of people, I know I can't, a good number of my friends, they can't say it. So there's a few that I thought were unreal growing up, like 200 point guys playing in the peewee levels and they just never went anywhere, yeah, which happens. Yeah. But, you know, you probably look back and think, holy, this is surreal. Like that you made it, right? That's, and everything that you just said, such a cool story for you to get that chance. You know, you play for London, look what happens in London, and then it's story from there.
Yeah, it's definitely always something that I, you know, continue to always remember and always cherish, and even the friendships that I made. And, you know, you're always thinking about some fun times and fun cities and fun stories and stuff that you've been involved in. And, you know, I still got lots of memorabilia around. You can see my Rangers Winter Classic jersey behind me there. Nice jersey. So great jersey. So, and then I think that's my first goal as a Ranger, first NHL puck right over there. So,
That's cool.
Like, you know, we got lots of stuff still kind of around, and definitely, definitely proud of what I accomplished. And you know, you always wish you could have played till you're 40, but I don't think my body would have held up much longer. So.
I'll say it between us, and I know if I think you would be doing better than Ryan Reeves would be doing.
Yeah, I know that too.
Now, staying connected with your gym a little bit, you know, and this is still technically like within the first topic. That's great. There's a lot I wanted to get to, and I think that was really good. But I want to get strict a bit about struggles and mental health a little bit. I like to have, it's always good to share stories and experiences, but to have you talk on a podcast and just get to know and get listeners. My listeners and other listeners who ever tune in to see the other sides. Mental health is so noticed finally in today's society a little bit more than what it ever was, right? And we were talking about kids, teens, you know, their roles change, their mental health change. They don't know if they're going to be that guy. Can they handle it? Can they adapt? Oh, if they're going to do good or if they don't get drafted, how somebody reacts, how they grow as a person. But do you think, like, I know you're with your gym, you think you mentioned you're going to do psychology, like psychology thing as well, which I think is massive. So with it being more noticed in society per se, or improved from what it used to be, and kids having to deal with a lot of it that people never really knew, because everyone thinks as a kid, it's like, you don't have mental health, you don't have any bills, you don't have a job, you don't have this. Bullshit. Yes, they do. there's just different levels of it, right? Do you think more can be done? From, let's say, the leagues, from more influential individuals, or if you being a gym owner, what do you think can be done to really improve it?
Well, I think if anything kind of comes at that young age, mental health, it could be a lot from pressure from parents, right? I think that could be, that's one thing I would stress so much is, hey, you might not, you know, there's 0.0001% of all hockey players step foot into an NHL game. So it's most likely not going to happen, but we're going to work our butts off to get you there and to do it. But if it doesn't happen, it's not the end of the world. Life goes on. Not everybody's meant to play in the NHL. And I think that's maybe one thing is the pressure gets to kids because, you know, it's become pretty wild out there, right? With, you know, parents will really do pretty much anything, which isn't also a bad thing too, right? It's still good to discipline your kid, to kind of be hard on them and tell them how to work. Like my parents were never really pushy on me. Like, but my dad would be, well, if you want to play there, then if you want to play in the NHL, then you're going to have to work. You better be shooting 100 pucks a day out in the backyard. You better be doing this. You better be like, if you want to play, I'm going to guide you. I'm going to tell you what you need to do. I'm not just going to be like, so you do need that discipline, and they do need to be told what to do. But at the same time, don't make it like it's the end of the world if they don't get it. So I think that's maybe a start for it. But for leagues, I know the NHL, I think there's people are talking about it more. So people know that you don't have to hold it in anymore. You can reach out. And I think it's up to, you know, parents, friends, coaches to make sure that everybody around them is good and to make sure that they are, you know, open ears and open arms when anybody or any kid needs to talk. So I think that's a big thing. And that's one thing that we'll offer as well. Right.
That's great.
If you ever have any questions, if there's anything that you don't think you want to go to your mom or dad about or something, like you can come to me, right? You can come chat with me and I'll give it to you straight and try and help out. So it's definitely something that we're going to be adding to our program.
It's a good thing that you mentioned that part, open ears, because I feel like more deaf ears return to it a lot before, especially from the youth side. And it's funny that you brought up the pressure side, because I had a fact here, different facts actually, from one surprising source, to be honest with you. But according to Southeast Psych in Nashville, the pressure to perform is the key problem to an athlete. And according to LinkedIn, fun fact, LinkedIn has a stat, the biggest problem in youth sports is hyper-competitiveness. The youth topic touches that we discussed just now, and obviously with hyper-competitiveness. But for you, you played in New York, Montreal, massive markets, as I mentioned, and Canadian markets. How did you handle the pressure? And did you learn from anybody that helped you handle the pressure? Or was it just experience?
Well, that's the thing. I was never really pressured to be anything great. So it was easy for me to just, I didn't even really think about it. I was just like, hey, I'm playing in Madison Square Garden. This is awesome. I was just happy to be there. Right. I was just like, and I want to stay. So I'm going to play. It's weird. I never used to get really much nervousness or anxiety, really. Like I, you know, playoff time, I've gotten more nervous for maybe running a class at my gym than I did for game seven of the playoffs against Washington in Madison Square Garden. Like, I don't know what it was. It was just something that was kind of maybe natural, or maybe I was gifted a little bit that way. But I think a lot of people that make the NHL have that. When you make it to that level, you kind of have that swagger about you where you're not nervous. But it was also, yeah, I think it's just kind of the way I was even brought up too, right? I was never pushed into anything. It was never, my dad would let me know when I played like shit. Like, I'm going to let my kid know when he plays like shit. Don't waste my time. Yeah, like I might not be that bad, but I remember my dad and I went to watch my nephew play last year, and him and his team that played terrible, lost like 5-1, and they just played just a terrible game. And like after, me and my dad are standing there, and, you know, all the moms are like, "Oh, good game, good game, good game," and me and my dad are like, "No, it wasn't. No, you guys played terrible. Like, yeah. I'm not going to come watch you if you keep playing like that." Like, I mean, there's still got to be some sort of that honesty, right? Like,
yeah. In life, you're not going to be handed those things.
I mean, yeah. Like, you still, I don't care if they win or lose, but at least put in an effort. You got to put in an effort. You know, if they lost, you can lose a game 4-1, but you still played great and maybe some bad bounces, whatever. But if you're not putting in the effort, then, you know, I'm going to, you know. But I kind of got off track there. I think, what were you talking about?
You're good. No, that's good. And that's actually funny. You mentioned the parents, too. It's having perfect segues here. And I want to tell listeners and viewers that Brandon and I don't plan what I'm talking about before. It's just like it's working out smoothly, the topics. But the one point I was going to say is that, and I'll give it credit, despite the hyper-competitiveness being, you know, a study that it's the most in youth athletes and pressure for older.
Yeah.
You got it. For the parents, the biggest problem is cost in the sport, right? In Canada, yeah. Anyway, I know for – it can be extremely expensive for your child to be an athlete. Obviously, it differentiates between hockey or baseball or whatever they decide to do. I know here in Sault Ste. Marie, hockey is ludicrous. I'm sure it's not any different in London or Southern Ontario. But I know baseball is really affordable. You know, that's why our enrollment is higher in baseball here. Not higher than hockey. It's not. Nothing's higher than hockey. But, like, it's higher, I mean, more enrollment is more affordable. But that's the other thing. And I remember with my father and other fathers being, the fathers used to run the rink when I was there. I've been around the rinks. I have younger you know, nephews and cousins that, you know, play, I shouldn't say nephew, my nephew's not old enough yet. I mean, cousins, I haven't any nephews playing yet, but cousins playing that same as you just mentioned, they lose a game 6-1, oh, good game. True. I can't, my body not wired for that. Not no. like I'm wired no. to be honest. Like I'm not, you would never want to shit on them or you would never, yeah. you never do any of that. You got to have the fun in the game, but there's that honesty yeah. because you have to develop in life and hear yeah. that feedback so you can get better. And if your team isn't good enough to be better, yeah. okay, then it is what it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The dads used to run the rink a lot. Now I think the roles have changed
yeah.
A little bit more from what I can recall.
Yeah. yeah. But I remember my mom, if I had a good game or if I scored a goal, usually if I scored a goal, she'd have Skittles for me. She'd have a little thing of Skittles. So I knew I didn't play that well if I didn't have Skittles waiting for me. Like that was my mom telling me, you don't deserve Skittles tonight. And it stung a little bit, you know.
You were looking forward to your Skittles.
Huh?
You were looking forward to your Skittles.
I was looking forward to my Skittles. So I remember after one of my NHL games that my parents were at, I scored a goal and my mom was there. And after the game, she handed me some Skittles.
And you're like, yes, I had a good game.
I was like, yeah, I played good. I got my Skittles. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, that's great. I knew I played good. This is bad because it's not like this anymore. If I got $2 for an assist and $1 for a goal. That was what I remember growing up.
Yeah. I remember there was a lot like that. A lot of kids like that. Yeah.
Yeah. The Skittles thing's a lot cooler though. I've actually heard that story. But I know we talked about the gym and your mental health a little bit, but mental health topic a little bit. Before we close out, I'll make sure to give you another little bit of the floor for, of course, to promote your gym a little bit. But obviously getting into a few other topics. Time flies. We're having fun. We're 30 minutes in already. I want to talk about the fighting in the game of hockey, okay? And I've had a few enforcers on this podcast. You know, Trevor Gillies was one animal of a human being, obviously. So one in particular, right? So what you and John Morasty, Nasty Morasty is another guy who's known on Shoresy, of course, and they all have different opinions on this. I am fascinated to know yours a little bit, but you did the fighting in the game of hockey is now banned in Major Junior. Okay. Obviously that's known. Okay. So I kind of wanted to dive into your thoughts with this, but connect it with the article that you did as I look down at it in February 2015, an article in the Players Tribune. So I have a few things I want to get into with that, but firstly, I wanted to get your take on fighting in the game of hockey. Is there a place for it still, or are we going to start having to get used to it, maybe that growing to the NHL one day where we won't see fighting anymore?
I mean, it would be a sad day. I think it's a part of our sport. It's something that I hope that they don't change, but I think it's changed now for the better where there's not just meaningless fights, right? Even though when two heavyweights went at it to the guys on the bench, to the guys on the ice, those weren't meaningless fights. Those fights meant a lot, and those were those guys standing up for their teams and making sure they made a stand. That's gone from the game, which I kind of understand, but I think you still need to police the game a little bit. I think people need to be wary about, all right, I'm not going to take a run at Sidney Crosby because I'm going to get beat up, right? So if you take that out, then Connor Bedard becomes a free target. I can run Connor all night long because I don't got nobody to face. So those big guns are gonna miss. Those guys are gonna miss the fighting the most, right? They're being able to defend, your teammates, being able to change momentum around on a dime. I would always fight. If we lost two in a row, that third game, my first shift, I was fighting. I was making a stand for our team. I was getting my guys going. I was waking my boys up going, no more damn losing, you know, we're going here. Let's go. Yeah, so, these are things that people don't know. Not a lot of people know the importance of the fighting.
Yeah.
And obviously the fans love it and the crowds love it. It's crazy there. Yeah. That, who knows if it's going to be out of the game. I mean, you see UFC is becoming the biggest sport in the world, but now they don't want fighting and hockey, right? But then they're going to watch. Then these people are watching the UFC the same night, you know, at midnight. So
what's worse?
Yeah. Like, what are we doing here? So, I, you know, most fights, you don't see a lot of injuries in fights. You see more injuries in hitting. So, there's, you take away the fighting, the hitting is going to go up, and there'll be no consequences for anybody, and that's about it. So that's kind of how I feel. I think the fighting where it's at is in a good place, where it's you know, like I said, you don't have as much of the meaningless fights anymore that where, you know, two guys just drop their gloves at the start of the game. Even though, like I said, to us, they weren't meaningless to us, but maybe to some people, it looks meaningless. And I feel that that's kind of gone from the game a bit.
It is. You know, and honestly, you mentioned in that 2015 article in the Players Tribune, it was titled Why We Fight. Now, at various points that I brought up, you know, that I wanted to ask about it, but one thing that I highlighted, and I talked about this at the beginning, is you discussed how you had to take the step to learn how to be a fighter and enforcer. And it was with Chris Bane. It's like, he was a guy that you obviously helped you. You took some advice from what could have made you, you know, fit into your role more. And you mentioned to Dale Hunter that if you put me in the lineup, you won't be able to take me out, which obviously happened, of course. So you mentioned a quote in there saying, my thing is, if you want to go, you want to go. There's no point in making fun of each other's moms out there. Now, of course, people make chirps towards moms. I know that when you're on the ice, things come up that you never thought you can think of. That's 100% when you're in the zone. But you just said a few moments ago, too, you want to get the boys going, right? You have a three-game skid, and you're saying to yourself, look, what am I going to do to pump up the lads? What do I need to do to get the crowd into it, especially if you're at MSG, you know, or if you're at the Bell Center, especially. Yeah. They love it in the Bell Center. Yeah. More than any. It's can you kind of get into that mom quote a little bit? But also just going, taking it for the boys, like the why about that article.
Well, that was more me talking. Like, I wasn't a huge chirper on the ice. I mean, we were just going to make fun of each other. We're all in the same league. Like, what's the point of making fun of each other? Like, oh, you suck. Like, it's basically, mine was, are we fighting or are we not? Like, we're not going to make, what am I going to make fun of you? Like, the way you look, like, did you make a bad pass? Like, we're grown men here. We can't chirp each other. For me, the only thing was, are we going to fight or not? Right. So that was kind of what I meant by that. Not that I don't think many people are making fun of each other's moms, but, you know, it's more,
they do.
More back in, you know, elementary school, I think, is when we did that. But yeah. My point was just, my thing is, we're looking at each other. It's whether you want to go or not. So, I wasn't a huge, you know, chirp guys, or, I mean, we're all in the same league. We're all pretty much, you know, same caliber. I know some people, they'd be like, you're a fourth liner. Oh, I'm still in the NHL. I'm still on the same ice as you, bud. So, that was kind of my point on that one.
Yeah. You close friends with Derek Stefan, and you mentioned in there how you broke his jaw on a hit and you felt bad. And I don't know if you swore in the article or not, so correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't have the quota that you did. Usually I would, but I think you said the son of a bitch came back the next game and got the game winner to eliminate you guys or something, right? Like, and he was a big factor in the game. He breaks his jaw, comes back in a full together shield, probably put together by screws, and he gets the winner. And, like, you, after that game, you're texting him saying, hey, you know, you feel bad, but you're hugging it out at the end. You know, and I think that's a big point why you say why we fight. You do the grind, but for the reward at the end, and it doesn't matter if it's a win or a loss, it's that moment that you even shared with him at the end, hugging him, or Lundqvist, your buddies with. Like, talk about, though, that hit on Stefan. I'm sure he holds it to you to this day still.
Yeah, no, we made up. We made up. But that was the thing. We were down 2-0, and after we were game one and game two, were in Montreal, and that was when Kreider ran into Carey Price and injured Carey Price and put him out. So, you know, we're down 2-0 going back into New York. I have to change momentum. So I'm out first shift, and there ain't no puck. I'm hitting everything I can, right? I don't care if you're my friend or not. I'm hitting you. So Stepan gets the puck kind of in the middle. He moves it over the side, but I finished my check. I find out after. So it was just the hit was clean, but it was late. So my hit was 0.5 seconds after he moved the puck. A late hit is 0.3 seconds. So that's the kind of the difference in that hit. So I'm already kind of committed to that hit. And there's no way I was really stopping. So, but he got up. I apparently had a hairline fracture, but he still played. Like he still came back and played. So, we've talked since, and we obviously talked after. I even talked to him that night. I text him saying, sorry, didn't mean to break your jaw. I just was trying to, I'm trying to change momentum. We're down 2-0 coming back into New York. So I got to do something.
Yeah. And honestly, that article is really cool. I like seeing those articles. I like when players get inspired or share that on the platform. There's obviously been many different articles, many that were personal, the funnier stories, not saying yours are either or, but yours, obviously a key word you mentioned, why we fight. You know, the role you brought up, but you do it for your teammates, obviously, and obviously it's something that you took pride in doing. Now, Brandon, I'll move on to the other topic side of things.
Hey, hold on, David, hold on. I just had my phone just went 10%, so I just want to plug it in. I don't want
to. Yeah, you're good. You're good. Okay. Yep.
Where's that extension cord? No, I didn't see it. For my wife? Oh, yeah. I think that should be good. I just want to make sure that's charging.
The beauty of pre-recording, something you can
turn
out really quickly.
Yeah.
I have about probably four topics that I had queued up still, and then it should wrap. It should be good. About, is 20 minutes still good for you?
Yeah. Okay. It should be good. I just want to see if this is okay, it is.
It's perfect.
Okay.
I'll just count us back down so I know where to what do you call it?
Okay.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yeah, so transitioning, Brandon, there's obviously a lot, like I said a little bit ago, not enough time in a recording. You and I could probably sit here for hours and go through stories, but you did mention Carey Price. This is kind of off script per se that I wanted to mention. And obviously he's not playing right now. It's a very, I don't, speculations of what it may be or what it is. Obviously he's currently stepped away from the game. He had such a great run in the bubble. And then obviously he's Canada's icon in net. And what I want to mention with Carey Price, you were a teammate of his, you know, and obviously without sharing anything, because I don't want to know, no one needs to know the personal business going on if you know or not, but have you been able to connect with him at all since he's stepped away from the game? Obviously it's, you know, there's, you want to try to help the hockey community. Like we talked about, it's so tight, and there's a player assistance program, and you hope that people are getting the help that they need, because there is more to the game than just hockey, right? Outside of the game, there is more. And it's a good program that is offered in the league, but is there, you obviously teammates with Carey Price. Is there any kind of thing that you can share that's an appropriate share on the show about him at all? Have you been able to connect with him at all?
Yeah. Kerry's, he's one of my good buddies in hockey, and, he lives far away from me, but, we share, we both love fishing and stuff like that. So we always kind of, I'll always reach out to him, or if I see on his Instagram, he's been fishing or something. So yeah, we still keep in touch. Obviously, I don't think with hockey, we always keep in touch with each other, some of our best friends throughout, but it might be a text every 6 months, right? So, but we always stay in touch and see how we're doing. I know Kerry struggled with his knee. He always had some knee troubles there. So from my understanding, that's one of the things that has really affected him and affected his play, and it's if you're sore, if you're a goalie and you got soreness, it's tough. It can be tough on you. So, Kerry's a great guy. Pricer's one of my, was always fun to play with, and always, he was quiet. All most goalies kind of stick to themselves, right? And you have to kind of go at them. So I always went at Kerry, and always pushed his buttons a little bit, maybe tried to fight him in practice quite often, or even in the dressing room. But he's a strong boy. He's got that strength that you don't know he has. He's pretty strong. So doing the wrestling matches didn't always turn out the best for me, that's for sure. So
I always said as a joke that he looked like Enrique Iglesias. I don't know if he'll tune into this and find that funny if he does read that. I don't know why I randomly thought of that, but I never
thought of that. But the only thing is, if you see Kerry in person, he looks nothing like Enrique, because Enrique is a beanpole and Pricer's a pretty big human being and a pretty big strong man. So I would never put those two together.
We'll keep that on here, and to anybody that probably will comment and at me below chirping me why I said. But I know when you mentioned Carey Price, just when you're talking about the Rangers there and the Stephon hit and all that, it's been a topic that, the player assistance program players have been rolling into. Spencer Knight players have been now more into it. They don't get the details of it, of course, but the game is obviously missing Carey Price, and so is Canada. So now, obviously, Dave McKay here with the Game Sports Podcast, being continued to be joined by Brandon Prust here on the special edition upload. I want to dive into a trade. You were traded twice in your career, is what I have noted here, but there's one that surprised you. And I know that we won't spend as too much time on this topic as much, because it's something that you have shared before on other platforms and podcasts. I believe the latest one, you had a podcast back in April 2023 on a show called The Athlete and Artist Show. And you were talking about how you were traded to the Rangers, and you found out at a bar. You were sitting in the bar. Can you expand on this a little further, just in case that this is newer to the viewers tuning in?
Yeah, I was in Calgary, and my dad and his buddies were in town visiting me. Sorry, my dad and his buddies came to fly out to Calgary. So there's probably, I think my dad was staying at my place, and maybe his buddies were staying. I can't really remember, but we were at the bar playing pool. We were just shooting pool somewhere in Calgary. I kind of forget the bar. And then it came up on the screen, Brandon Prust and Olli Jokinen traded to the Rangers. I was like, we're all looking at each other. I'm like, what the hell? And I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, I haven't got a call. So, like, I step outside. I call Olli. I'm like, yo, did you hear this? What's going on? He's like, yeah. He's like, I don't know. He's like, nobody's called me. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? So nobody contacted us. The next day, they said, the trade hasn't gone through or something. And then, Brent Sutter before the game goes, yeah, this is our team. We're sticking with our team. Like, they made us, they put us in the lineup. We played the game knowing that the trade was probably going to go through after the game. And so we just, we played the game. And then after the game, okay, yeah, you're going to New York. And I was like, all right, peace out. Thanks.
Thanks for nothing.
I mean, I wasn't too mad about that trade. That was kind of, one that I rather, it ended up being great for me. That's where I'm going with Tortorella. He let me play. He really, that's kind of coach that likes my style of likes my type of player, right? So yeah. I love playing for him, and he gave me a great opportunity there.
So I'm going to go back to him in a second, actually. I'm glad that you brought him up, because we actually uploaded on our socials a little clip from one of our members on our podcast. His name's Dane, and he gave a pretty good opinion about Tortorella this year. But to get to my other point, you were traded also to – it was the Montreal trade, right? From Vancouver to Montreal was the other trade?
Montreal to Vancouver, yeah.
Montreal to Vancouver, yeah. And you were traded for was it
Zach Cassian.
It was Zach Cassian, yeah. See? Didn't have that note. I'm going by memory with that. But that experience was obviously a little bit different than your first one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, you got the call from Bergevin. You knew it was kind of happening, right? It was a bit more, let's say, of a normal, opposed to you with Calgary playing the day of apparently you got traded, then you get traded after the game. Like, it wasn't that big of a mess, per se.
Yeah. Mine was when I got traded from Montreal, I was in Italy.
Oh.
So I was in Italy, and I was at my aunt's house. They didn't know my wife at the time. She was started bawling her eyes out, and they didn't know what they thought. Someone died. I got traded to Burge said we traded you to Vancouver again. I was like, all right, peace out.
Obviously,
just like, yep, I'm going. So yeah, I had about 3 days left in my trip, and then ended up going to Vancouver when I got home.
You know, Italy, I was actually there for my honeymoon this year, and it's nothing better, man. I dream about it every day still. About it every day.
Yeah. It's
but
awesome.
Tortorella, we mentioned a point that he's at this year. You, just so everybody knows, this is a pre-recorded. Obviously, we're not live. We're recording on January the 2nd, okay? Russ can attest to that. January 2nd, 2024, we're recording at 7:56 p.m. Given anything changes from between now and when this is uploaded, John Tortorella, in my opinion, is the favorite for the Jack Adams this year, at my point. And I agree with my analyst, Dane, that said that, and Alex. That guy is doing something in Philly. And I know people are easy to point the finger at how Torts is, but you had him as a coach in a very good team in New York, right? Can you shed a little bit of light on how Tortorella is? Like, you see him on TV and he's like, stupid question, I'm not answering that. If you see him on TSN, or if you see him, he's just so blunt, right? But I'm assuming that he obviously is a good coach, and you probably know a different side of him than other people do.
He's a great coach, X's and O's. This guy has a game plan ready. He has every system down to a T, ready, prepared. He has his team prepared on paper every game. So X's and O's, he's a fabulous coach. And then what I loved about him was just like his honesty, right? Just like you see him in the media. He doesn't care if you're making $8 million or you're making $1 million. If you're playing like crap, he's going to let you know. And he's not going to, you know, I hated those coaches that, you know, even if your top line were just absolute garbage and been playing like bums for weeks, they don't get in trouble, right? But, you know, if I, you know, it kind of sucks that way. If I turn over the puck, I'm pinned to the bench. And, I mean, that's the name of the game. I understand your first top line, they're trying to make more plays. Or as a fourth liner, you're not supposed to be dangling at the blue line. I understand all that. But if you're just if you're playing your effort level, right, he didn't care if you're – as long as you're – but the effort had to be there. So, that's why with Philly, he's got a lot of foot soldiers there, right? So – it works with teams like that, foot soldiers. Remember when he went to Vancouver, he kind of came in after Vigneault, who runs a pretty loose ship, I think, you know, pretty relaxed, let the guys kind of do their thing. Torts isn't like that. So he comes in as a drill sergeant, and it didn't really fly in Vancouver. They didn't like it, right? They had a little boys club there. They were happy with their country club and the way it was going before. So, but you get to Philly, I saw one of his interviews, his team's got balls, right? So he's got a team like that. That's all, you know, they're sitting there listening to him and they're like, yep. Okay. So he's got them rounded up. He's got the perfect type of group for his style of coaching, which is what he needs. And I agree with you. He's probably the front runner right now in the Jack Adams. We'll see how the season finishes out, but he's got the squad. He's got a good group behind him that believes in his coaching style. So, and it's proven him. He was my favorite coach I ever had, him and obviously Dale Hunter and Terry, and those are kind of my top three coaches that I really liked. So I hope he wins it and proves all these naysayers wrong.
Oh, I know one team that would welcome him, actually, is what I should say, and it's a team in Canada that's in Ontario.
Yeah,
I think people know what I'm talking about. Who he can?
Yeah.
Speaking of the guys that get the ice time when they should be sitting, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be welcomed in one specific.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah.
Someone ahead. Yeah. It's the color of the jersey behind. Now, the Madison Square Garden brawl, March 19th, 2012. I've seen it. Rewatched it today before we talked about it to get myself rehearsed in a little bit more. Obviously, it was you. I'm going to try to go by memorization on this. Eric Bolton, Mike Rupp went at it. It was you and Jansen. Cam Jansen was on this show before, and he briefly talked about it. I thought he'd get into a bit more detail. Obviously, he didn't. And I believe the other one was Ryan Carter and Stu Bickel. Those are the three fights going at it, right at center ice at MSG, okay, where there has been so much history in that building. It's a building I haven't had the opportunity of seeing yet. I'd love to see MSG. That's literally a landmark in all of sports. But you're there at center ice against New Jersey. Pete DeBoer was the coach, and obviously Torts was your coach. What's going on? To give the, like, I know it could be a long story, but in a brief, how'd all that happen? What transpired, led to it? Everything.
Well, Torts came into the room, and obviously when you're home ice, the away team puts their lineup in first, who their starting lineup is. So you get to always match. Yeah. So Torts gets their starting lineup and sees that they got Bolton, Carter, and Jansen to start. So Torts comes in and he goes, "This motherfucker, are we allowed to swear on here?"
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
"This motherfucker, he's starting his dumbass, his meatheads." He's like, "I'm not saying we got to go out there and fight him, but we aren't backing down. We aren't backing down. This guy's an idiot. We aren't backing down." He goes, "Prusty, Rupper, and Bickel, you're moving up to center from D. You're taking the face off." Bickel was a defenseman. So he goes, "You're coming up on four." So the whole dressing room, everybody's like, "Oh," everybody's just like, "Oh." And so we're like, "All right, well," he says, "we don't have the fight, but we're not backing down. Like, obviously, we're all going here." So Bickel comes up to me and Rupper. We're kind of talking, and he goes, "Hey, how do I take a face off?" and we're like, "Stu, don't worry about the face off, bud. Don't worry about that face off." But I think he might have won it. I don't know. I can't remember. But yeah, he was worried about taking the face off. We're like, don't even worry about it, bud. Just get the Vaseline on your face.
Get your knuckles warmed up. Go punch the wall a couple times if you have to. Go figure it out.
Yeah.
And you drew Cam Jansen was your guy. Was that planned out too? Did you guys
have I think that they wanted it the other way, but I'd already fought Bolts that year. I'd already fought Bolts, and like Jansen was a little more my weight class. Bolts is a pretty solid guy. They lined up this way, and then I think we switched. And then they switched, and then I switched again, I think, because I was like, "No, I'm going Jansen." We had our mind, but I think they wanted it the other way.
Yeah.
But we had our minds made up, and we had, as home ice, we had last positional change, right? So so we kind of stuck it out. Carter and Bickel were always going to be that one, but the Jansen one was, I was like, "I'm Rupper, you got Bolts, bud. I'm taking Jansen."
And you guys went the longest. You and Jansen went the longest.
That was probably mine and Jansen's probably, eighth fight together. So we kind of know each other's tendencies, and I know that, and we both can go for a long time. We both, Jansen especially, he's one that he'll fight for 3 minutes if he had to. So we both can go for a long time. So we kind of knew that was going to be coming.
Oh, and it's honestly amazing. If you haven't seen it on YouTube, viewers, listeners, pull over if you're whatever, it's worth the watch. That's the old school hockey that I don't recall seeing a line brawl for a while. I could be just completely missing something.
Yeah.
Fights, but something like that, that's gold. That video is gold. And it's good to know the background of it, right? Knowing that Torch was in the room saying these motherfuckers.
You know?
These guys are going to – no, that's hockey at its finest. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously, as I said, time flies. You're having fun. There's two other quick points I wanted to get to before we wrap up the show. Obviously, some key things. One thing that's key on this show more so, there's obviously the draft story we want to get to, and then, of course, your championship win in London briefly. So the draft story is something that's come big on this show. I use the big in quotations. It's something that we incorporated in one of our first segments, and it really clicked off. Everybody wanted to know someone's draft story, if they were drafted, undrafted, how they got their tail to the NHL, if they were undrafted, but if they were drafted, what happened that day. And there's been some beauty stories, obviously, knowing about GMs and coaches that people probably have never heard before. And obviously, you won the third round to Calgary. I'm sure you had a couple meetings leading up to the draft. I'm sure there's probably a couple teams, assuming so, and some coaches and maybe some players you talked to. What is your draft story? Where were you when you got drafted? What happened? What happened leading to it? Did you know it was going to be Calgary? What can you share about your draft story?
Well, I don't know if you realize this. Most people don't, but I was drafted. I was 2 years older, so I was 20 years old. So Ovechkin's 2 years younger than me. So all those people drafted were a lot younger than me. So for me to go as high as I did was even very more rare because I was very old. I was older. I started with the Knights late, right? So, and I remember our GM, so it was in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the GM for the London Knights, their assistant GM, he's a scout with Chicago now, one of the head scouts for Chicago. And he told me, he said, Prusty, don't think, because I had two suits, right? One for day one and one for day two.
Oh, yeah.
And the night before, we're all out, having drinks at the bar and all having a good time. I'm with my family, my mom, my dad, my sister. And Jim says, Prusty, you're probably not going to go on the first day. He goes, you're a second day kind of guy, that fourth round and later. And I kind of looked at him. He goes, if you go on the first day, I'll do cartwheels down the steps. And so, I'm kind of, they're just trying to help me maybe not get my hopes too high, right? So I literally had two suits, and I had my A suit and my B suit, right? And my really good suit that I saved for the second freaking day. So I had on my, just my Moore's crappy suit on for day one, because I was like, well, I'm probably not going to go day one.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was a little older, so I didn't go to I didn't go to any of the combine, right? I didn't do any of the physical testing. I didn't have many meetings. It was like the day or two before when I got there that I started getting calls from, and I went and did like a workout with a team. I was actually the New York Rangers. I actually thought I was going to get drafted by the New York Rangers because they had like five or six picks in that first day, something. They had a bunch of picks. So, and I had a really good, I went and worked out with them and had a really good showing, and I even had a meeting with them and stuff. But anyway, that's kind of, and then I end up going to Calgary, and their table was right in front kind of where we were sitting in the arena. And Daryl Sutter came up, hopped over the boards, and came and sat with my mom and my dad. And we still have the picture of my dad with Daryl Sutter, and my mom just, telling my dad how they really wanted to get me. And that was their, their big, they had two guys that they wanted to get, and I was one of them, and they were, happy that they got me. So yeah, that's kind of my, and then, the next day we were able to leave, me and my family, and we went to, Myrtle Beach and did some golfing, and because we were on a little bit of a tour, but thought we were going to be there for day two, but we ended up getting a free day. So
so we took had off. To wear the good suit then.
But I never got to wear the good suit. I should have worn it on the golf course the next day
with your jersey around underneath it. No, see, that's cool. And then actually, that point, very good point, you would have, because you are got a couple of years on Ovechkin, of course, there, as you mentioned. So that's true that you draft year would have been. You got that outside draft, which is so, it is rare. That's another good point. Wish I would knew that in my introduction. I would have said Mr. Rare Man. Maybe that's what I'm going to call this episode, the Rare Man. Okay, so.
That's how I like my steak, too.
Oh, yeah. Great steak. Bloody delicious. Yeah. I can't agree more. If someone makes a medium rare, I'm in good shape, but rare, just get all the protein in. Yeah, I agree. You win an OHL championship and a Mem Cup in London, okay? Stack squad, okay? I told you a friend of the show, Rob Shrimp, was, you know, he was quite the talent in London, of course, yourself, Corey Perry, the Dave Bolands, and I'm missing names too. I'm just going by
Dan Girardi, Mark Bethot.
Girardi, arguably one of the best defensive defensemen I see when he was playing. Like, obviously, good mark on the Rangers, right? So, you guys won not only because of just a good team. You guys are just great to watch. London always has a good team, and I believe. I don't know if you're still doing work with London, but you did do some stuff with London, correct?
Yeah, I'm very good friends with the Hunt. very good friends with the Hunters. So, I was at the game the other night. I would definitely like to take over the training side there. So that's for another, maybe the next podcast.
if something comes, I'm calling you and getting you back on with that breaking news.
I'm close with them. We've always been close ever since I played there. And obviously being a London guy, I'm around a lot. So
So you guys win. What's that feeling? You're young adult, obviously. You're it's not like you're 13, 14, but of course you would have been 18 or 19, correct, when you won?
I was 20. I was 20.
20 years old.
I was 20 years old, when we won. So I was overage here.
Yeah. So how are you feeling when you win? How does that?
Well, I being from London, all right, I grew up going to London Knights games at the old London Gardens. It was the rink before the John Labatt Center was built. Well, now the Bud Gardens. So I grew up since I was 4 years old going to the London Knights games every Friday. My dad would take me, my dad would be in the standing room and I'd just sit there in my seat and watch. They would go out to the car during intermissions and have beers. And I would just sit there and watch Zamboni go round and round, right? This is the '90s. This is kind of how it was. And, grew up watching the London Knights and then finally to kind of play for them was a dream come true for me. To put on that jersey was very cool. And then, that last year I'm with them, my third year, my overage year, we had the best team, OHL team of the century. We were voted, right? We didn't lose a game until 31 games into the season.
That's right. That's right.
We lost. I mean, we lost seven games all year, but the last two, so we really only lost five. The last two, we sat everybody right before playoffs. And then I think we lost maybe three games in playoffs and Memorial Cup, something like that. So, and it was just being able. I remember getting the cup, and you're going around the rink, right? So, but my family sat down, in this corner. And by the time I was getting the cup, I was kind of down the other end, right? And you're supposed to just kind of go round and round. I grabbed that cup and I just skated right over to where all my friends and family were. And I just held the cup up and
held it right up.
Right up to them, right? So emotional and such a good kind of just getting some goosebumps and some tears in my eyes right now thinking about it. So, that's something I'll always remember, holding that up to my family and my friends and, just to my dad, right? My dad took me to all those Knights games growing up and to finally hoist the first OHL Cup and the first Memorial Cup. It was something I'll never forget.
No, it's in those. That's why I like bringing up those moments. I'm glad you brought up that way with the family. We've heard stories on here where people say what they've done after with the trophy. Things that go on after. But that moment on the ice, you have that probably felt like 20 seconds or 10 seconds, but really at 30 plus seconds where they didn't share with your family and that emotion. Yeah. I don't know if you have a picture of it, lifting up and screaming.
I think it's up at my parents' place. I don't think I have it here. if I do find it here, I know, and I think someone even painted a picture for me of it. It's the same one. It's just me kind of holding the, it was the OHL Cup.
Yeah.
And I'm holding it up, and I know that that's the moment I was holding it up to my parents, my family.
You get to go, when you go all through that happen, there's a couple things that happen to you there. You realize all the things that happened to build up to it, the hard work that you put in. But then also that preps you in a way too for the next step. You know, not a lot of people make the NHL or pro hockey even sometimes after the O, you know, but you did have the chance to do that. And I'm sure winning a championship helped your growth as a player more so because you were in the grind. You know, winning a hockey championship, it doesn't matter what league, Stanley Cup's the hardest trophy to win in sports. We know that, right? But you having a little bit of experience being in the Ontario Hockey League and going to the Mem Cup, you can transition that success in relation still to the NHL. Yeah, it's a different league. It's a completely different level. But to gain that experience, which I think experience is so imperative to have in hockey, that experience at a young age helps you as a professional, a pro overall, when you get up to the NHL level.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's helped me throughout my career. I always had pretty good playoffs, you know, even playing with Montreal, playing with New York. I really stepped up my game. And I think it's that experience I gained from playing with London Knights and our playoff runs. Even the year before, we lost in the semifinals, but we had a really good kind of playoff run. And then going obviously and winning the cups, it helps you grow so much as a player and a human, right? Just going through those experiences, it's something that players need to cherish more, right? You need to know how important that is to try and get as far as you can, because it's just going to give you knowledge and experience that's going to carry you and help you in the future.
It does. Brandon, now I'm going to get to the wrap up. It's the saddest part of the show that I call it. You know, it's you and I have been connecting for the past few months and we were able to get this in and very happy that we did. So before I let you go, I'll do a bonus yes or no question just because we, you know, took the time today and it's a hot topic here on this podcast. Okay. Obviously you were around when it all started in terms of shootouts in games after the end of a game. So I just need to know, and if you want to get into a reason why, feel free, but if you just want to say yes or no or to choose one, that's totally fine. Shootouts in hockey, should they stay, should they go?
I don't mind them. They're for the fans. We're trying to make it, we're trying to grow the sport. If there's a point up for grabs, it's regular season, may as well. You know, people find it entertaining, and it is pretty entertaining. So why not do it? I mean, they do it in the freaking World Cup for soccer. Like, if you're gonna complain, that'd be something to complain about. Doing it to win a cup. Like, I would never say that in hockey to do a shootout. But during the regular season, there's an extra point up for grabs. Why not?
Yeah,
fans love it.
Especially when someone like Merrick Malik comes down and does a through the legs on Olev Kolz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Stories that we'll always see. Yeah. Now, obviously, as we recorded, the first game of the Women's Professional League already happened, and they had a rule that they enforced that once you're on a power play, if you get a shorthanded goal, the person comes out of the box. Now, it's something that I will talk about. By the time this is uploaded, already have been uploaded, but I'm going to bring up that point in a future podcast episode, and I like it. I don't think it's popular. Maybe it wouldn't be popular with the men. Don't get me wrong. But got to say credit to that league starting. But that one rule, for some reason, Brust, it stands out to me that shorthanded goal, guy comes out of the box. I like it too.
I mean, why not change it up? Why not make it interesting? You know, you just got scored on and your power play's over. just a double dagger. Just shove it right in there.
It's literally like dodgeball.
Give it a little twist.
You catch a guy dodgeball, the switcheroo, just like off of the movie Dodgeball.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Okay, Brandon, so I'm going to give you the floor to wrap up. I was going to have you say a quote of the day, but I'm not going to put you on the spot for that. If you feel like putting a quote of the day, feel free. But I want you to remind listeners of where they can follow the BP8, your gym, where it's located, what your kind of doing. If you want to just use the floor, thank anybody for it, what you're doing now type thing, then we'll close out the show. So the floor is yours to kind of get most of what you're doing.
Well, yeah, and thanks again for, you know, talking about it. It's definitely something that I've always dreamed about and wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do this after my career, but basically, you know, help that younger generation reach their full potential. And, you know, I did a lot of great things to, you know, I did a lot of things right and I did a lot of things wrong, right? So with that, we gained knowledge. And I think it's our duty kind of as parents, as coaches, as teachers, to pass down that knowledge to the younger generation. And that's kind of what I'm doing and, what I hope to continue to do and help these kids out, help some junior players out, maybe some NHL guys. I would love to, just get them, good and strong. Like I said, it's a gym, but it's also, a lot more than that, right? This gym has a good family, you know, family vibe in there. It's a big family community and everybody's, you know, it's a lot of fun working in there, and especially working with all these teams. I've been working with lots of hockey teams, and there's nothing more than, you know, I don't think there's anything that makes me smile more than these kids in my gym, and they make me laugh, and you know, they make it all worthwhile, watching them kind of have fun and continuing to get better as players and as humans.
Love that. See, that's also a part. I'll use that as a quote. It's good. It's that's good. That sent them out, but that's also very good to see. It's rewarding for you, right?
Yeah.
And that's what a big part of it is. Now, I got to say that when I'm in London, I do travel up if I ever have to shoot you a message, because I think what I'm going to have to do is put on a GoPro or put on something, and you got to put me through the ringer.
Okay. Right. I'm down.
Let me. You might need to have a garbage bin nearby. It's been quite some time, but it'd be. I think it'd be funny footage to have myself put through the ringer in a workout that you could put me through. I'd love to do that. I'll have to definitely.
All right. You could even try jump into one of our classes. So we do classes every day, right? So you can there jump you in. I'll do the workout with you. Me and you will work out together.
I like that. You know what? And I'll get a Leaf jersey and put your name on the back, even though you never played for Toronto. Because I think that's something that
I played a couple exhibition games with the Leafs. I had a couple good, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I think I was number 82, but I had a good fight with Chris Neal when we were playing.
That's right, you did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I had a good one with him. So I got some Leaf in me.
So if you have 82, I'm going to get that shirt pressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to bring it, and I'm going to bring you a shirt for this podcast, and we're going to do a video workout, and you're going to have me vomit three times, but it's going to be worth it.
I love it.
Awesome. So give that a follow on, of course, Instagram and social media. And if you're in the London area or surrounding area or whatever, maybe if you want to reach out to Brandon, reach out to him. Or if you need to get in touch with him, you can get in touch with me, and I will provide the email, of course.
It's bp8.ca is the website, bp8.ca.
Perfect. I'll definitely do something below in the description for you to click and access as well. And maybe there'll be some more bigger news in Brandon Press's training career, but we'll save that for another podcast. So, Brandon, before I get to the closer, I want to say thank you very much for taking the time. Obviously, we did plan for 45 minutes, but the known thing on this show is we go always a little extra. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing all your stories, your history, getting into the real life talk, right? Mental health side of things and the gym. And it's great to see what you're doing, giving back. You played such a great career. You know, obviously, it's good to see what you're doing now afterwards and what you're contributing back to those that are their need of it. You know, someone with the guidance from a psychology perspective too. I love that. You know, I definitely would like to, you know, even hear any stories about that in a future episode that hopefully we can have soon. But I want to say thank you for taking the time. It's been a few months of planning, but it was worth it when it all got put together.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Of course. This has been the Game Sports Podcast. David McKay has been hosting you throughout this entirety of the episode. I was joined by Brandon Prust, of course, and I want to say thank you to you, the listeners of the Game Sports Podcast. Without you, the show wouldn't be what it is today. Make sure you hit like, follow, and subscribe. Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Yes, we're on TikTok now. Really more active on TikTok. So make sure you follow that for all the fun clips that we will be sharing for the Game Sports podcast. And definitely, if you want to log into YouTube, or if you're not able to log into YouTube right now, make sure you hit like, follow, subscribe on Spotify and Apple. But when you have the opportunity to go on YouTube, check out the 91N YouTube channel. It's a newer channel, a new program that we obviously are part of, the Platform Sports. There's mental health podcasts on there too. There's lifestyle and agriculture podcasts, variety of podcast content on there for you to enjoy. And of course, the Game Sports podcast is up front there with the sports category. So make sure you check that out. If you're interested in doing a podcast, you can email 91networksm@gmail.com. Or if you're currently doing one and you want some guidance, you can reach out to the crew at 91N. Getting to our conclusion, I would like to remind you to keep your stick on the ice, swing your bats, catch touchdowns, drain your threes, and shoot your shots. Booyah.